to the Hour of Lateral Thinking, heard weekly from New York City. I'm Janet Coleman.
I'm David Dozer.
The displaced playwright. Lateral thinking is sideways thinking. It unspools the mind.
It's not necessarily logical.
Its conclusions, if any, are unforeseen. As always, we will be joined by Chris Cerf, co-author with Henry Beard of Spinglish and Encyclopedia Paranoica, and on his own, A Skunk in My Bunk, compulsive writer and songsmith David Finkel, Maggie Paley, author of More Than Just the Book of the Penis, and audio engineer and musical perpetrator Bob Auld, to discuss hats. So put on those thinking caps.
Hats and caps, too, huh?
Put those caps on. Caps, I think, is an extension of hats, isn't it?
It's part of the hat world, yeah.
It's part of the hat world. Now, David, you are a distinct part of the hat world. I've counted your hats on occasion. I've seen them flung in baskets and put on, and, you know, soaking wet. And
yeah.
What's your favorite type of hat?
I have a huge cowboy hat that I got in New Mexico at a flea market, and inside this huge cowboy hat it says New York Hat Company. But so I thought, oh, this is good, the New York hat. But if I wear it, it's good for the rain. It's this huge brim, and if I wear it around the village here, the Greenwich Village, people call me Tex. And if I'm in a good mood, I'll go along with it. Otherwise, I start yelling back at them or something. So I don't like to wear it too often. It's a dangerous kind of hat. In fact, when I was a kid, hats got me in trouble because my father, I figured it out, my father never wore a hat. He was proud of it. He said, if I wear a hat, I'll lose my hair. Short story long, he lost his hair. Anyway, so I didn't know how to wear a hat. That's probably what it was. And I got this golf hat from the South Hills Country Club, and I wore that, and people scorned me for that. And then I got a Day-Glow pink hunter's hat, and I had that on, and the kids at school, really, that was enough already. That was it. Goodbye, Dave. And I stopped wearing hats for a while. The end.
Well, besides headphones, Chris Cerf, what kind of hats did you wear?
Well, I don't usually wear hats except when it's raining, but I have a huge collection of baseball caps nonetheless because they sort of mean different things to me. Companies I worked for, or shows I worked on, or teams I rooted for. And I can't bear to throw any of them out, much to my wife Catherine's disgust. So I have huge shelves full of those. Then I have a few weird hats for special occasions. I have a hat with a solar panel in it and a fan that's supposed to keep you cool.
Say what? How does that work?
It's like a cool hat with a fan inside, a pith helmet, actually.
Well, and, that'd be perfect and for then the pandemic, wouldn't it?
When it's hot, the panel powers the fan, which turns, and it doesn't keep you cool, but it's very silly. And then I have a hard hat from Sesame Street when they built their little theme park down in Pennsylvania, and a Russian hat from a visit to the Soviet Union. But as I say, except when it's raining and I need a baseball cap, most of them stay in my closet.
Excellent amount of hats to have. Now, David Finkel, you like hats? You got hats?
Yes, I do. But before I discuss any of that, I just want to make it clear that at no point during this show will I be talking through my hat.
All right.
Hats off to you for that.
What a mad hatter you are.
We're getting into precipitous
territory here.
But when I was a kid, there were two trends that I were involving hats. There was the Davy Crockett raccoon hat phase.
Yeah.
And I certainly had one of those. And then, I'm not sure whether this is before this or after this, the Civil War suddenly came up and people wanted to have either Union caps or Confederate caps. And I think at that point, it was cooler to wear in New Jersey to wear a Confederate cap. We weren't thinking in terms of politics or the war at all, the Civil War at all. It was just the idea that that cap was a little cooler.
The gray cap was
cooler than the blue cap.
And did your parents say, "Hey, kid, don't wear that hat"?
I think my parents throughout my childhood just tolerated what I was doing. They knew it was a phase and then I would pass through it. And
that
they were right.
David, it's funny that at friend's school, a Quaker school where I went, people wore Confederate hats in the fifth grade too. So you're right, there must have been some craze. So I certainly don't think Quakers would have recommended that, but there you have it.
I don't know how anybody that the deacon of the Quaker school didn't say, kids, this is a war hat. We don't believe in war here. We're Quakers.
Exactly. I didn't wonder that at the time, but I've wondered many times since.
There was just a big disconnect. We knew that at some time in the past there had people had worn hats and caps.
We'll see how big of a disconnect. I mean, we'll see what kind of an undertow the gray Confederate cap has in New Jersey.
Nowadays, I think that we would not have this trend.
I certainly wouldn't be part of it.
I think we do have this trend. I think we got the MAGA hat. We got the same kind of hat.
Now, if you wear a red hat that looks like the MAGA hat already, it's like scary. I would certainly not be wearing a bright red hat.
I guess we'll have to put on some of those Soviet Union hats. Maybe they'll replicate them for us.
Well, I'll get one during the next music break and put it on.
Put it on? Excellent. Okay. Put them over your headphones. Maggie, I know you don't like hats. You don't wear them ever, but you must have bought some and had some and worn them to school, no?
I don't remember ever wearing a hat except fairly recently. But first, I want to tell you that my father always wore a fedora. I mean, not in the house, but outside he wore a fedora. And my mother always wore a hat, too. I don't remember what kind, but I have pictures of her and she's wearing hats. Not one at a time. More than one, but...
She's wearing one hat at a time.
Mm. One hat at a time is what I'm trying to say.
Always definitely tempting to wear two at a time, though.
People wore hats. Men and women wore hats in the 30s, the 40s, and then suddenly men didn't wear hats, but all men wore those fedoras or something like
that. They had to. It was to cover their heads.
Well, I remember the story when Truman was informed that Roosevelt had died, and the first thing he did was he went to the cloakroom to get his hat.
Mm. Does anybody remember that when John F. Kennedy didn't wear a hat, people were kind of amazed?
I think that's when hats for men went out. He set that trend, John F. Kennedy, I would say.
Yeah, it's like Clark Gable killed the T-shirt.
Right, something like that. He didn't wear a top hat to any part of his inaugural?
He may have done that. But what we're talking about really is historical periods, fashion periods. You can look at during the Depression, you can look at the bread lines, and you never see a man without a fedora.
Right. And they somehow kept their wearable hats, no matter how poor they were and how much bread line they had to be on.
And I wonder whether...
Yes, I remember my father's hats.
Did your father have a fedora also?
Well, yes, I think so. Wasn't that what you wore? What's the other
Absolutely.
Name for common,
yeah.
well, common the, man's hat? What was the name of the hat that Robert Mitchum and Humphrey Bogart and all
They
of
all
those
wore fedoras.
Fedoras.
Film noir hats, you know, where they kind of shape the brim around to suit their noirish personality, and I think our fathers did the opposite. They shaped their hats to suit their non-noirish personality.
I think in Europe they may have been referred to as borsalinas, but they were...
Didn't the Borsalino have a bigger brim?
Borsalino had a wider brim, yes.
A wider brim and a smaller...
But I'm wondering whether the wearing a fedora somehow led to the phrase coming hat in hand.
That's an interesting possibility, huh?
Why would that?
Because you would hold your hat out and they would put an apple in it.
It was a form of not begging, but almost requesting.
Going to your relative and saying, could you give me an apple?
An apple. Or a hat.
Well, now they don't have their hat in their hand because people don't wear hats so much. Those they do. There is a standard street hat, though, in New York City. I don't know if they have them all over the country, or the world. They do have them all over the world where you need a hat. You're suddenly in the city, you lost your hat, you don't have a hat, and you buy this hat for about $10. And it's,
no, it's
made
$5.
Of some kind $10. Of vinyl wool or something. You have those hats, don't you, David?
Yeah, I do, but I think they're $5. Or you can get the one that's advertised in the New Yorker for $100.
Right.
But either way, it's just a hat that fits over. It's like a big beanie, and it's got a
and it
rim.
Folds.
But
it, folds.
But you know, heat escapes from your head if you don't cover your head. And like in the winter when it's cold some years, that it's better off to cover your head and even wear a hat.
Well, that because I would say knit caps are now very popular.
Knit caps,
yeah,
that's
there
what
you
we're
go.
Talking
like, yeah.
about. They're the thing. But I'll tell you something. There's a benefit to the ones you get on the street, and that is moths don't like them.
Why is that?
Well, they're plastic.
They're plastic.
They're
polyester.
Moths.
Moths like the kind you can get from the New York, the kind
yes.
that advertise in the New Yorker.
Right.
Made of cashmere
right.
and in every color of the
right.
rainbow.
Right.
I am a big hat person. I love
yes.
love hats, right?
Yes, we
and,
remember that about you. You're always wearing a hat.
Not now, but
outside.
In the summer, your hair sort of substitutes as a hat, although I have billions of summer hats. Now they've gotten sort of hot. It's hot to wear a hat in the summer. You have to really be dedicated to the fashionability part of it. But I remember getting a bunch of hats. They were kind of like, what do you call them? They're like hats people would wear in a Shandon Star bar.
What's
you know, they're
that?
Kind of workman
what?
Bar. Like they're sort of Irish looking hats. They're caps.
Oh, caps.
Anyway,
yeah.
I remember I didn't feel so well one day, and S. Klein on the square was still there, and I thought, well, I'm not feeling well. I think I'll go shopping. I went shopping, and I found a bunch of fabulous hats, knit. I don't know where they were from, but you would plow through, like, wood counters or something with other people. You would be scraping through these things. Anyway, I found a bunch of wonderful wool, I'll call them beggar hats. Is that a proper thing to call them? Anyway, it's the kind of thing Barry Fitzgerald would wear in a movie, you know, only wool. And I remember, and then I went home because I really didn't feel well. And the next day I went to the doctor, and as it turned out, I had mumps. And my face in my hat grew bigger and bigger and bigger. So I had a big head and a big hat. And, of course, I must have infected thousands of people in shoppers in Esklein Square. But I kept one of these caps for years and years. And I remember crossing the street once, and a guy who looked like he was dressed for the Salvation Army crossed my path. He looked like he was coming from the church getting some free food. And we passed each other on the street, and he looked at me and he said, good hat.
Huh.
And I thought, geez, this guy has great taste. hats. You know? Anyway, let's have a cheer for a hat. And here it is, a musical cheer for a hat.
Presents requested this evening, it's formal, a top hat, a white tie, and tails. Nothing now could take the wind out of my sails, because I'm invited to step out this evening with top hat, white tie, and tails. Oh, I'm putting on my top hat, tying up a white tie, brushing off my tails. I'm
booting up my shirt front, putting in the shirt studs, polishing my nails. I'm stepping out, my dear, to breathe an atmosphere that simply reeks with class. And I trust that you'll excuse my dust when I step on the gas. For I'll be there, putting down my top hat, mussing up a white tie, dancing in my tail. Mussing up my white tie, dancing in my tails, putting down my top hat, mussing up my white tie, dancing in my tails, putting down my top hat.
Well, you could tell by the dancing, that was Fred Astaire with it. You couldn't tell from the tap dancing that that was a Johnny Green Orchestra, but it is. So, you know, hatting is, do they still have hatters? I know that I get emails just about every day because I was curious once from a place called Hats in the Belfry, which is a great name for a business. But if hatting, is it a rare occupation now, isn't it?
Do you know why there were mad hatters?
No, that's what I was going to say.
Oh,
why?
Because they dipped the pin in mercury and then they put it in their mouth, and then they put it in the hat.
Oh,
and
mercury's that's right.
A poison, and it drives you crazy. So hatters went crazy from the mercury.
What pin?
Thank
that's
you.
That's right.
What pin?
What pin? The pin that you're pinning a hat when you're, however you make a hat.
Oh,
I didn't go to hatter school. But however you do it, somewhere it involves sticking a pin in mercury and then putting it in the hat, and then also it ends up in your mouth somehow.
Mm. Oh, okay.
But as I said, I have never been a hatter. I don't know.
There were times when hat designers were well known in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
Women wore a Lily Dashe
hat. Lily Dashe.
Lily Dashe, exactly.
But nowadays, I'm not sure. I can think of an Englishman, Philip Tracy, who designs hats now, and he's fairly well known, but you don't hear too much about hat designers.
No, there's one great designer named Suzanne on 61st Street in Lexington, where she has a shop. She makes lots of those wonderful, crazy summer hats that women wear, like at the Ladies' Conservancy party they have in Central Park every May. Everybody buys hats there. But it's a vanishing breed.
And somebody must make them for the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah. Right, the same idea.
Those giant, rich gal hats.
Yeah.
What now, the making hats, finishing the hat, that's a Stephen Sondheim song, David Finkel, you told me about. What's the gist of that? That's part of this hat making, hats is poison thing, isn't it?
I think I'm going to pronounce the word correctly, synecdoche.
It's connected.
That hat that he's talking about is somewhat of a synecdoche. For a synecdoche stands for one thing that stands for a much larger number of things. So when he's writing about, it's from, finishing the hat is from Sunday in the Park with George, which is about Georges Seurat and his painting. And so he's singing about, at one point, finishing a hat on one of the characters in it. And it's creating, and he talks about creating something that wasn't there before, but is there now. And it's really the work of the artist is to finish a hat. And actually, he called I guess it's his autobiography in a way. It's a collection of his lyrics. It's called Finishing the Hat.
Brilliant. Terrific, really.
Interesting. Right. Interesting.
Yes, it is. So, yeah. I think of those kinds of hats, and the Georges Seurat painting. Those guys were walking in the strolling in the park hats, right? In the Tuileries or some French park, right?
Did they wear
top hats? Or
yeah,
they were. I think in that, that was a period in the 1890s, perhaps, when people would not go out, even on a Sunday in the park, they would not go out with a hat on. You wouldn't be fully dressed without a hat.
Without a hat,
yeah. Now, I want to tell you briefly about Lily Dache, because I woke up one morning after we'd been announced that this was going to be the subject, and I woke up saying to myself, "In Your Hat" by Lily Dache, and so I Wikipedia'd her, and
that's a little bit of lateral cheating, but that
does. Yes.
Anytime you look up Wikipedia for this program.
No,
okay.
It is not.
We're all allowed to be lost.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
We all look up Wikipedia. Just Maggie is bold enough to mention that she has.
Yes.
The rest of us just lie.
We pretend that we knew it all along.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So what is this, Lily Dache?
So, first of all, her major contributions to millinery were draped turbans, brimmed hats molded to the head, hats.
A clush, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's not.
I guess.
Anyway, go on. Let's hear what Lily thought.
Visored caps for war workers, cone-tipped berets.
Come on, wait. Let's try to
snoods.
Picture that. A cone-tipped beret?
Yeah, I have no idea what that is.
It sounds like a dunce cap.
Well, the beret has that little wiggle thing on top, doesn't it? That little, it's not a dome, but it's a...
The cone tip?
It's a point, whatever it is.
Beret, it's true. It has a little piece of something on there.
A nodule, something like that.
Threaded nodule.
Yeah.
Yes?
And colored snoods and romantic massed flower shapes. Mm. Dache is reported to have said, "Glamour is what makes a man ask for your telephone number, but it also is what makes a woman ask for the name of your dressmaker."
Why not your hat maker?
Your hat
maker. I don't know.
Is there more?
What?
More about Lily?
Oh, by then, she was probably also making clothing. But her hats cost upwards of $20 at a time when a hat could be bought for just a few dollars.
And what is just a few, do you suppose? Two?
Two.
$2.
Let's say two.
Dollars meant something then.
Yeah.
Right.
They were worth something.
That's true. So.
And then it says, not only was her brand well known, Lily herself became famous. She was a mystery guest on 28 August 1955 episode of the sophisticated television game show, What's My Line?
Whoa! Featuring
my father.
Yes! Do you remember Lily Dache? Were you up that night watching?
I don't remember seeing that particular show, but I'll bet we could find it on YouTube.
Sure.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yes.
Wasn't there a hat guy named Mr. John or something back then?
Yeah, there were all kinds of hat people. Sometimes Mr. John, I think Halston, I think, started out as a hat maker. Or some of these famous people, Sophie of Saks Fifth Avenue. They had a little boutique. I don't know how they did it. And they were usually named something else, like... I don't know, some Yiddish name and they suddenly transformed themselves into society hat makers and changed their lives. Sophie of Hungary became Sophie of Saks Fifth Avenue. So it's a weird thing, and I never knew a hat maker, although I knew people who were in the coat and fur business because they were all in my family, but not one hat maker. Did you ever know anyone who knew a hat maker or attended a hat maker every season? No.
I actually do know a guy who designs hats. I don't know his last name. He lives in my neighborhood, Bill, and he designs hats. I don't know how many he sells, but he designs them.
So he makes
nice hats. I just know a guy who designs hats.
Yeah. I know a woman who designs.
Yeah, you travel twice
hats.
A year to see her new latest hats.
Mieko Mintz, yeah, she's a fantastic designer of hats and other things. She has a lot of clothes too, exotic clothes, but her her hats are shaped like what's that snoods and things with strange points. There's another wonderful hat maker named Amy Downs. Did anybody ever hear of her? She started on, I think she was on the Lower East Side, and she had a place on 14th Street. And she also, for a while, had a little hat stall, something like Sophie of Hollywood, in Bendel's. No, not Bendel's. Yes, Bendel's. What moved into Bendel's after it first left its space? Serendipity? No, what the heck was the name of that place?
Bendel's Bonnet.
A Bendel's Bonnet. Yeah, right. A Shakespeare sonnet.
Mm-hmm.
Mickey Mouse. Okay. I forget where I was there.
So, through the ages, women's hats have often been the butt of jokes, haven't they? The old phrase, where did you get that hat? Where did you get that? I heard that all my childhood.
Here's your hat. What's your hurry?
There's that too.
Keep it under your hat.
But I think women who would come home and ask their husbands if they liked the new hat, or he would see it and say, "Where did you get that hat?" And she would think she had the hottest thing, and suddenly it's been made fun of.
I don't know if any of you remember the P.D. Eastman kids book, Go Dog Go, where all the way through it, the dog comes up and says, "Do you like my hat?" And the other dog says, "I do not." But, Dr. Seuss edited that book, and it sold millions and millions of copies.
Well, it was the 500 hats of Bartholomew
Cubbins, right?
Yeah.
Right. That was one of Seuss's early books. Yeah,
yeah, it was.
Yeah, he was fixated a bit on hats, but we'll get to that as soon as I... isn't it supposed to be... Isn't it a superstition to never leave your hat on a bed?
Yeah.
That's
right. In fact, John O'Hara had a story called The Hat on the Bed.
Oh, that's a good story. Yeah. You know something's coming there.
You bet.
I kind of live by that superstition. I will not put a hat on a bed. And if by some reason I throw a hat on the bed without thinking, I go nuts.
Especially a Confederate hat, for God's sake. Watch out for that one.
I would think the superstition just comes from the fact that if you carelessly sit on the bed without looking for what's there, you could crush
sit
the
on
hat.
The hat.
Yeah. You could crush your hat.
Right.
Well, that's a bad thing.
It's a practical superstition, like walking under a ladder, which is dangerous, not just unlucky.
Right.
But if we're talking about Dr. Seuss, why haven't we should mention The Cat in the Hat?
Well, of course, I was going to get there next. Yeah.
Somebody who had Lily Dashay was married to somebody who had Lily Dashay on his TV show might have had something to do with that Cat in the Hat, huh?
Well, a little bit, yeah. My dad published Dr. Seuss, and my mom started Beginner Books with Dr. Seuss, so yeah. My connection to hats beyond the Confederate hats we wore at Fred Seminary.
Did you have there were never cat hats made there, were there? I mean, that cat, the kind
well,
of
I actually have a, I have a hat wore. Like that. They became a merchandise item.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Geisel hated that kind of merchandise, so he wasn't really in favor of it. But once he was gone, people started making all kinds of toys and things.
Right. Right. Was there ever a Sesame Street type hat? A Sesame Street creature who was made into a hat? Like a kind of puppet hat on top of
it? I can't really think of it, except Cookie Monster was a very logical hat to make. And, you know, with a googly eye. So people made blue caps with those eyes. But there's no character on the show that I can pick up that's famous for a hat.
Do you have any of those? Hats?
I have every one of them, sure. As I said, much to my wife Catherine's absolute disgust.
Poor Catherine. I would say, Catherine, be easy on the man. He needs his hats. I think everybody.
Nationality, or most nationalities, have their nation's hat. You know, it's a distinctive hat from where they are. And it
like
shows
the beret?
Afghanistan had that terrific hat till everyone turned against them.
The sombrero.
They were wearing them before.
And the Uncle Sam hat, I guess, counts. Right?
There's but, one, sure.
And so does this hat.
And what about other fictional characters? If you think of Cyrano de Bergerac,
had his hat.
And in his hat, he had a feather that was known as a panache. And we know, and that's given us the word panache. When you have style, you have panache. Uh-huh.
And then there is the Mexican hat, which had a famous dance named after it.
Thank you.
Wow, and that tour de force on the trumpet is by Rafael Mendez, and it's the Mexican Hat Dance.
Didn't that kind of remind you of a Warner Brothers cartoon?
Absolutely.
And that's because a lot of the same musicians who played on those cartoons, you were hearing them here, because Rafael Mendez was located in Hollywood, and he just, you know, got all the guys he worked with to accompany him.
Well, I'm worn out. I've never danced so fast in my life. Would you hand me my hat? It flew off while I was dancing.
Right.
Who did that arrangement, Bob? Do you have any idea?
Oh, I have no idea, but it's typical
wonderful.
Of the stuff. He would also do stuff like make an arrangement of the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto and play that on the trumpet.
Mm. Wow. That's great. Great,
so he was an amazing technician, and for that reason, trumpet players really dig him. And whether you do or not is up to you.
How could you not? That's terrific.
Because Bob is a trumpet player, or was a trumpet player.
Yes.
And with whom did you
I would say once a trumpet player, always a trumpet player.
Apparently,
wouldn't you, Bob?
So. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Name your trumpet playing companions.
Well, I think the most famous group I played with was Machito and his orchestra. And I also worked with Lou Soloff, the guy with Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Oh,
and
another
so
great
on.
Trumpet player, huh?
Yeah.
Here's to him. Did he die sort of recently, didn't he?
Yes.
Lou Soloff?
Yeah, he had a heart attack.
Yeah. So where were we? You know, what are we going to do? This will be the first winter where masks will be a part of our...
Hats.
Will be part of our hats. Do you think we'll have masked hats or what? Do you think
why not?
Suddenly
sure.
There'll be a
we can all go into business and make them now before people think of it.
They're already being designed, I'm sure.
Yeah.
They're ready to come to the market. You know, I was just going to say that it's frequently been mentioned that I'm a songsmith on this show.
Yes.
So it occurred to me that... I actually, some time ago, wrote a song about hats that was supposed to open the only musical I ever had on Broadway. And so I thought I'd sing it because it was never sung.
Please.
And it may never be sung again. I've got a passion for trading my cash and for any old-fashioned or newfangled hat. I've saved up every last penny and brought me so many that there aren't any more room in my flat. They're good for billions of things, such as crowning of kings and for tossing in rings and for passing when you need a new one. Life would be hell if I couldn't look swell in a perfectly elegant hat.
Wow.
All right.
That's yay. It.
Applause for that. Yes.
What
yes.
was the musical's name, by the way?
It was a musical called Hurry Harry, which was a success in that it got me to Broadway, and it was a failure in that it only played for two nights. So, so I've been a hit and a flop on Broadway. And that song was never sung in it. We decided not to use it. It was going to be sung at the beginning. It's about a guy who is trying to find happiness and put on many different hats to try and find happiness.
Yeah.
And so there you are, but that's enough.
Well, if they kept the song in, you might have run a third night, you know?
That's right.
So, now you tell me.
Right.
Putting on a lot of hats is sort of the equivalent of being what they also called a hyphenate. What's it called now?
Yeah, wearing a lot of hats. Yeah.
Wearing a lot of hats.
Yeah.
Or people will say, now I'm going to put on my my psychologist hat.
Yeah, right.
And now I'm going to put on my philosopher's hat.
Philosopher's hat is a big one, isn't it? Or is it Philosopher's Stone?
Stone.
But you don't put that. You don't put that on. You carry it in your pocket.
Right. And what are the other words for hats? Lid.
Mm.
Has often been used for hat. Topper.
Topper. Beanie.
Helmet. Cap.
Helmet. Cap.
Turban.
Oh, those
Koofy.
Are kinds of hats. Yeah.
What was that thing? Koofy. Yeah, there's Koofy. One. There's an interesting one. Fez.
Yarmulke.
Oh, that reminds me. That reminds me that I wanted to mention that my friend John Ash, when he lived in Istanbul, sent me a Kurdish hat. And it was one of the only hats I've ever worn. And it was various colors of sort of purple, but sort of red purple. And it was really good, and I needed to wear of something under it, because even though I have a very big head, which is one reason that I don't wear hats, it's this hat was too big even for my head, and so.
So what did you?
I wore something under it.
Another hat.
A snood.
A snood under a hat. Very good combination. Yeah. So it would bulk up your the space between your head and your hat.
Right.
Do you still have it?
I remember going to work. I had a big hat with a big, you know, like a milkmaid type of a hat. Or what's that kind of hat from the Revolutionary War? What was that called? It was like those white hats with the big crown and a little. Anyway, I had a bunch of those, and under them I would go to work in rollers, head rollers, to puff up, you know, to keep the bigness of the hat big, and also to keep the bigness of my hair big, so that after I got out of work, I could go out to like a bar.
That mean you had to keep your hat on all day?
My hat on all day.
And you wore rollers all day.
I wore rollers all day long.
Wow.
God, that's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it was a look, all right. It was a look of the hat. It was a look that, while crossing the street, the guy who had just finished getting donuts from the church would say, good hat.
Right.
So I felt that as an enormous compliment. It's funny to have just anybody acknowledge that hat, which I gave, you know, I gave the mumps to everybody in New York.
You still have it?
I finally lost it. I finally lost that great hat. And I really, after many sort of almost bouts with losing that, haven't you had a hat that went missing for a while and you couldn't find it and then it turned up and it wasn't lost? Well, this one finally did get lost. So sorry about that. Sorry, so sorry. Like to have it.
I'm a big fan of straw hats, of boaters. I love a boater.
Do you wear a boater?
I do.
That's fairly elegant, isn't it?
I don't know whether it's elegant or not, but it just is. I just like the look of them.
Well, jazz musicians are often distinguished by their hats. They get up there and they wear, I don't know, they can wear anything they like, but sometimes they distinguish themselves by a hat. And, of course, this is one homage to a musician, Lester Young, who wore a pork pie hat. That's Charles Mingus from the Mingus Atwood album, Goodbye Pork Pie Hat, Lester Young. So, yeah, well, the subject here is hats, and have we missed a single hat style in the
Homburgs.
World?
We didn't talk about Homburgs.
Homburgs—that's the diplomatic hat.
Yeah, and
and bowlers.
And the bowler hat.
That's
yeah.
right.
The Magritte right. hat.
Yes, Magritte.
Magritte liked that hat. What kind of did your father, did Bennett Cerf ever have a bowler or a, did he wear a hat?
Yeah, he wore a fedora when, you know, back in the 40s and 50s, like we were talking about, when everybody did.
And bowler hats were mostly a Great Britain, weren't they?
Yeah, I think so.
It seems to me. And they were worn till not that long, right up till not that long ago.
Is that the hat that was in the Magritte paintings?
Or? Yeah.
No, yeah, it's a bowler.
Bowler hat. And
sorry, David, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
But what about the Tyrolean hat?
Ooh.
What was that? What that looked like? That looked like.
I was just going to ask what that looked like. What does it look like? The Tyrolean hat.
It looks like something Lily Dash short brim thought up. A little swirling thing on the top.
Doesn't it have a brush in it on the side?
Might have had a little brush. Right. What did you call it when it was worn in some other hat? In the Cyrano hat? What was that one called?
A panache.
Well, I think maybe it had some berries or something, a little fruit cluster. I don't know. I'm not sure. What a Tyrolean hat. And I guess throughout the Alps, people wore those. So they must have, and they didn't cover the ears, did they?
No.
What about the old saying, that's a feather in your cap?
Well,
right.
I guess,
maybe
I guess
it was a feather. I think it feather. Is a feather.
Yeah. Well, that was it. Yeah, and the panache was a feather in Cyrano de Bergerac's hat. And then there was the three-cornered hat, which was very popular.
Back in the day.
Revolutionary
right.
time.
Yes. Right.
Mop cap, but that was the one. That was what popular for women.
Oh, right, a mop cap.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very good to keep curlers under, I might add.
And what about the term hat trick?
Oh, what hockey term. Hockey. Three goals or in soccer too.
Yeah.
When one player gets three goals in a single game. And
that's a hat trick.
And if you're at a hockey game, you're supposed to throw your hat on the ice when that happens.
Oh.
Wait a minute. What kind of hats do they wear?
Well, they don't, except for helmets. But
yeah, helmets.
The fans,
helmets.
Well, the helmet
the fans,
a hat.
The
a
fans,
helmet is most certainly a hat. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should all have helmets to go with our masks. That might be
We might need them at the rate things are going.
I think so. I think it'd be good to protect your skull.
And what about magicians pulling rabbits out of a hat?
Yes.
You have to have something of a sizable hat to do that.
Or a very small rabbit.
Very tiny rabbit.
Right, pulling a rabbit.
A bunny. A
little bunny. Or two bunnies. Two little bunnies. Four bunnies. Make that six bunnies and a...
Put a lot,
and a hard-boiled egg.
And then the old thing by everybody's door at one time was a hat rack. As you were leaving the house, the last thing you would do is grab your
hat
and race
grab
out.
Grab your hat and leave your worries on the doorstep. Well, I have.
That,
I think Chris Cerf and I have too many hats for a hat rack.
Well, get more hat racks.
Okay,
that's right.
We will, and then get
a
more,
simple solution.
And then get more hats.
Remember, it used to be totally wrong to wear your hat inside, but now I notice people do it all the time. Especially baseball caps.
To wear a hat in the house.
It should be very, very rude.
And would you say that people, that more men wear their baseball caps with the bill in the back rather than the front? That's cool to have your bill in the back.
It must be a certain personality, don't you?
I think maybe that's passed a little bit. But,
do you think?
Went back to catchers.
Less so.
Catchers wore their hats.
Maybe about 10 years ago, everybody... It was wrong to wear it in the front, but that kind
Man,
of stuff.
I think wearing a baseball cap could make you bald anyway.
That's what it usually
You have been listening.
People wear them to cover it up, usually.
You've been listening to the Hour of Lateral Thinking. On this show, you heard us with Chris Cerf, David Finkel, and Maggie Paley discuss hats.
This program originates from five neighborhoods in New York.
In one of them, our audio engineer and musical perpetrator is Bob Auld, with special thanks to Fred Astaire, Rafael Mendez, and Charles Mingus. You can email us at catradiocafe@gmail.com. I'm Janet Coleman.
I'm David Dozer.
The Displaced Playwright.
This has been a production of Cat Radio Cafe.
The V-Line's favorite radio empire.
And remember our slogan.
Except for Dr. Seuss's cat, cats don't wear hats. They curl up and sleep in them.